Welcome to the Off the Road Again podcast. I'm Chris.
I'm Ross.
And I am Bear Connard from Ace Performance.
Sweet. Welcome. And this is our show about anything and everything off-road. I say that every time, but like we can talk about car stuff too. Because I'm pretty sure the episode with Johnny, we talked about only EV and like car stuff the whole time. So
pretty much.
Don't feel like you have to slay anything too much for us. As always, we're socially distanced. It's the only way we've ever done the show. I'm still in the Midwest. Ross is in the Northeast. The Bear's also in the Northeast. So we're like tagging in that small group of shows where we actually have people in the same time zones.
A rarity.
It is. We're going to jump straight into Bear and Ace Performance because you and I are boring and we'll probably do like a SEMA catch up show later. And so people can just, they want to listen to our updates next episode.
SEMA and press cars coming soon to a show near you.
Yeah, literally next episode. So
literally.
I control that. I will determine that. So Bear, where do you want to start? You want to give us an overview of what Ace Performance is?
Sure. Ace Performance, I actually started with a partner well over a decade ago, and started out as a performance shop, kind of morphed into a performance shop that has dynos. We started doing engine management. And then from there, it kind of parlayed into a lot of boutique British brands. So in 2014, I became involved with the Ariel brand. So that's the Ariel Atom and the Ariel Nomad. So everything from the Ariel Atom 2 to the Ariel Atom 3. And in 2020, I actually was personally in charge of launching the Ariel Atom 4 in North America.
Oh, so, wow, nice.
So that was something I did, put together the whole press launch and released the car to the U.S. So we've got U.S. manufacturing in Virginia for the Ariel Atom 4.
Oh, wow. Didn't know that.
In 2016, back to Ariel. I was the first one to have an Ariel Nomad in the U.S.
That was 2016? Wow.
Yeah.
2016, yeah.
Homie, and Matt then, LeBlanc drove it before we ever saw it on anything else. That's how long ago Matt LeBlanc was on Top Gear.
I just remember talking to Clapman about it after they used one out west.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that car actually for Clapman, the car, I had that car in New York at the Classic Car Club in Manhattan.
Yep.
And Zach from Classic Car Club had just taken it to Monticello Motor Club and got it properly dirty. And then we got the call, oh, this needs to go out for this Oregon Trail shoot. And
surprise,
like, oh man, what am I supposed to do? So literally I went down, I brought one of my technicians with me. We went down to Classic Car Club in Manhattan and like we were going to go through the car mechanically to make sure that, because it had to leave from Classic Car Club Manhattan where it was properly hooned and then go straight off to go on this shoot. You know, you guys are in this, like you understand this is how these things happen.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I wanted to go down and prep it. And then I get there and I thought like, okay, maybe they'd have some mud wash. No, it mud. So most of the time I'm just literally, and I'm not dressed for this occasion. I don't have any, I'm like stealing detailing supplies and using whatever I can to like clean the car. So we go through it mechanically. And then the steering wheel is just like, it's Alcantara.
Yeah.
Right. But it's completely covered in mud and matted down. It was just like, what am I supposed to clean it with? And I'm like, I guess I'll go in my toiletries kit and get my toothbrush out.
Oh no.
So yeah, that's how that steering wheel got cleaned.
That's pretty funny.
Up.
Wow.
So yeah, you don't want to tell Zach that if he's listening.
Yeah, mention it to him next time we talk to him.
You got to hold his hands with your teeth for a like while.
Were they displaying it? Because I've been to the Classic Car Club a few times. And for those who don't know what it is, it's like a membership type facility that has this big open warehouse on the water, on the Hudson, on the west side of Manhattan, actually right by the Javits Center where the New York Auto Show is. And they also have, you know, their membership entails participation, so you can borrow the club's cars. And they have a bar, you know, and they have events all the time, and they do drives. Were they displaying the Nomad Filthy like that, or was it just like somebody returned it? And
well, we had it really clean. Zach from Classic Car Club was like, hey, do you mind if I take this up to Monticello? And I was like, yeah, no problem. And there's actually I forget where the video is. Maybe it was on their Instagram or something like that, but or YouTube. But it was him just completely thrashing that Nomad.
Oh, man.
And that was a Nomad Tactical supercharged. And if you look in those pictures too, that car doesn't have the top light bar in those pictures. Mm-hmm. And the reason is, I think Car and Driver happened to roll that car on us.
Oh boy.
Yeah, in another magazine article. So
great.
Yeah,
so
that's why it's missing the top light bar.
That's funny.
And there's a big ding in the top cage from that.
So
that
we frequently talk about how a lot of the UTVs don't have ROPS rated roll, but the cages themselves aren't actually rated to support the weight of the machine in the instance of a heavy rollover. I'm guessing the Nomads is. It's an actual like structural cage.
They literally rolled it off the side of a mountain.
Oh,
and
God.
Then they rolled it back and it was you wouldn't, it was probably all vehicle problem. It would never be the driver's fault.
No,
especially
never.
The press guy.
Ever.
Right? Ever. No. So I just attribute that all to the vehicles. or the road condition.
Mm-hmm.
It was never a driver fault.
It's never operator error ever.
No, it never is. I was just driving along when
this
happened.
The tree came out of nowhere.
Yeah, shit like
that. Yeah, that's funny.
Right. It just rolled over on its side, and I ended up down in a gully. We're all fine, but yeah, we extracted the vehicle. It's got some dings and dents. It's fine.
Dude, I was digging so hard to try to find him without a light bar.
Well, the Instagram pictures from the car club, that's the one where it had, was the ones you showed earlier.
Okay.
With the red one was where it had no light bar.
So on the bright side, at least it was better than if they had taken an Adam over to the off-road course at Monticello.
Yeah.
That would have been an interesting one to try to explain. But that's funny. So out of all of that aerial products you've driven, if you had to pick a favorite, is it Nomad for the...
Hands down.
Yeah.
Hands down. I mean, you know, in the everyone would come up to me and they'd look at... And at the time in 2016, this is like when the Nomad came out, like UTVs were getting bigger and more popular. And then they're like... Oh, well, I can buy this $30,000 Can-Am. Why am I going to buy your $90,000 Nomad that's only rear-wheel drive and, you know, doesn't have all of the kind of creature comforts that a side-by-side would have?
Right.
Like side panels and floor panels.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Bluetooth speakers or things like that. But the Nomad, everyone, whenever I'd be driving that around, whether it's on the street or off road or wherever, they'd just be like, people's reaction, and it goes along with all the aerial products, people's reactions to it is they don't really know how much it costs, they don't really know much about it, but then they look at it and they see whether you're driving fast or slow, they're like, whatever that guy's doing, he's having a good time.
Right.
Exactly. So that's kind of what makes it so fun. And so when, you know, I'd be driving on the street, they say, where are you supposed to drive that thing? I'm like, wherever I want. Right. You know,
point and shoot.
It doesn't really matter. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the funny
curb here through the Boston Common doesn't matter.
You know, we for so long, like, lamented the rise of like fast SUVs, you know, but as you probably know, the streets of New York City and Boston are pretty horrendous. So,
oh yeah,
the off-road variants of these things with, you know, ground clearance and suspension travel and sidewall is actually like a lot easier and better to drive in most circumstances around here than the sports car or the supercar that people think is, you know, the fastest way between two points. So it makes sense. I mean, this thing would probably be a ton of fun around a city.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I did drive it. I did drive it one night through the city in the rain. And it was pretty fun.
It sounds this fantastic.
This particular one was supercharged. So 300 horsepower.
Oh my gosh.
About, you know, 300 crank horsepower, but the wheel horsepower is not too much different from that, about 1600 pounds. So, and the noises it makes and just, you know, just driving around in the city, downtown Manhattan, after leaving the classic car club, just cruising around, hooning it around, people took notice. It was pretty fun.
Does it have traction control?
No. Okay. No, your right foot. That's
ABS?
It. Nope.
Wow. Okay. So this is
no power steering.
It's about as raw as
you can get. You can get in trouble if you're not careful.
I'm thinking of some dirt roads in Western Kansas where I would just go forever. Like, it just, they're just rough enough to have it be like, I feel like we just glide across the top of everything. Like, it would be amazing.
Yeah, no, that's the vehicle is, I've had some of the best times where we're like at the Monticello Motor Club, their off-road course up there, just cruising around. You know, it had hydraulic handbrake as well.
Nice.
So you know, that is just so much fun because it's got such torque, especially with the supercharger, that even if you overbrake the thing, you can still just, you know, it's got a limited slip. You can just still rock it out of any situation. So you don't always need to carry all the speed, right? Even if you over handbrake the car, you can still shoot out of there and just, you know, as you do a 180, you can just shoot out like nothing.
That's amazing. I still need to, I got to make it over to Monticello. I've driven past there 1,000 times, but I've never actually like been to the track or the off-road course. So it seems
they've got a pretty neat setup. And, you know, I think that a lot of other clubs, from what I know, are, you know, have taken notice, and there are a lot of, I was just at a meeting with, some of the top motorsport clubs. I was down in Atlanta at the Porsche Center with some of the top clubs of the world, and a lot of them have off-road experience courses. So there's ones in Japan that are going up, in Australia, Mexico, outside of Mexico City, all private country clubs. There's Tampa, Florida. All sorts of things that are going up. So even in what we kind of think is a little bit of a lull in our economy, there's still all of these opportunities that are going up.
That's so interesting. You know, I, from my reading and understanding and experience, like, US is the only place that has like dedicated off-road parks. You know, there's racetracks around the world and clubs around all over, but I haven't really heard about, you know, the actual standalone places to go off-roading like we have here. And I know some of that is like land based, and because we have so many different governing bodies, you know, broken up between states and counties and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, I don't think Lime Rock will be doing one anytime soon. It's a little, a little tight there. But
although I think that they're, you know, they've done a lot recently with kind of their new ownership group, you know, and the introduction of like the FCP group as well.
FCP has done a lot for Lime Rock over the last little while.
So they've been really, really good. I think you'll see some things happening there, but still they're so locked in and governed by what the town people around them say. So that's where places like Monticello excel, because they're
in the middle,
you know,
they're
still a reasonable distance from a major, you know, major city, but at the same time, there's no real governing laws.
Oh, what's the track up in, I think it's either Massachusetts or New Hampshire, that like one of the turns basically like rides along cliff or something like that?
Well, there are two. So I belong to a track called Club Motorsports, which is up in New Hampshire.
Yep, that's what I'm thinking of.
So it's a 2.5 mile track with about 300 feet of elevation change, basically cut on what
you say 300.
What's that?
You said 300?
300 feet, yeah. Holy basically crap. Cut on a what's called a ring dike, which is a collapsed volcano. So
nice.
Super, super neat. I mean, it's just an incredibly picturesque thing. If you're not paying attention, usually on a cool down lap, I'll tell people to look around, and they're like, "Oh my God, I can't believe!" You know, I had some guys from the UK over because I brought over the new Ginetta G56 GT4 and did a soft launch there a couple weeks ago. So I brought a couple of colleagues from Ginetta UK over, and they were like, "This is like mini spa. Ooh. This is how cool this place is."
Damn.
I mean, praise doesn't get much higher than that for a track.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. So there it is.
That is so active. Oh, that's
kooky. Yeah.
Yeah. And that picture doesn't really even do it justice. I mean, turn 5, turn 11, that, and those are kind of your highest elevation points.
Okay.
Turn 9, this is kind of, so from turn 6 down to turn 9 is all downhill.
Okay.
And then that's turn 8 to turn 9B is what they call the saddle. And then from 9B to 10 is what we call horsepower hill. Because you know, if you're in a Miata coming out of 9B going up to turn 10, you're doing good if you can just maintain speed.
Oh wow.
But a lot of slower cars will actually start losing speed as you go up there.
Okay, that's not that's steep enough for a circuit.
Dude, I have limited experience on Road America, and I remember climbing that hill to that hard left, and that looks way longer. Like, it's multiple corners.
Yeah. Yeah. So so Club Motorsports is a really unique place. It's a little less than 2 hours from me. Actually, in that picture, if you looked in the upper left corner, there's just past the go-kart track, there's a building there, and I actually own 10 acres right next to the track where I've got nice. Storage for client cars and whatnot. So we actually pack it full of aerials and Ginettas, and we roll them right on the track. That's and then awesome. When we're done. Basically at the top, just the next clearing past the karting facility, that's my area. So I'm basically, you know, I can just drive cars right over, and we have a blast.
So two questions. First of all, what do you use as tow rig is always curiosity.
Yep. So I've got a 2020 Ram 3500 Laramie.
Mm-hmm. Comments. Yep. Okay. Yep. Gooseneck, or do you just pull off the bumper?
No. So it's a gooseneck. 40-foot two stack. So I can 40. Add,
that's 40. Trailer.
Yeah. So I can have I can fit two full size cars in there, and yep. then over kind of the gooseneck portion. Yeah, there it is. Over the gooseneck beautiful portion, trailer. I can have all of my gear, tables, tents,
nice
supplies, okay. everything else.
So, all right. So
you got lights in there and everything. It's powered.
So you mentioned Janetta.
Yeah, sure, power. Yeah.
So I want to just ask about Janetta and what yeah. they're doing now, because I have family friends. Probably haven't heard of them. Their company's name is Michael's Vintage Racing.
Okay.
They used to be out of like Fishkill, and they just moved. But they work on and restore the old Janettas, like 60s, 70s, I think.
Yep. So. Yeah, so Janetta was founded in 1958 by the Walklet brothers. And they were actually in the U.S. in the 50s. In 2005, Janetta was purchased by someone by the name of Lawrence Tomlinson, who still is the sole owner of Janetta to this day. And Lawrence, interestingly enough, had just won Le Mans driving a Panos.
Really?
In 2005. And he said, his successful businessman said, you know, I want a car company. So he actually was his first bid was to buy TVR. And
okay. Oh man.
So he got and he got into this ironic times now. He got into a bidding war with a Russian fellow who ended up buying TVR. And you know, they got into kind of a bidding war, and then Lawrence said, the heck with it, I'm gonna buy Janetta. And so he bought Janetta. So Janetta's obviously been growing in the UK. It's massive, right? We've got 5 championship series, you know, it's live streamed all over. There's just a ton of Janetta going on in the UK. It's a household name. So an opportunity came to bring Janetta to North America officially. And I was presented the opportunity to become the North American brand director.
Oh, wow.
So in 2020, at this basically the same time I launched the Ariel Atom 4, I launched the Janetta G56. Well, we called it the G55 at the time, GTA, which is a GT Academy car, which is, you know, the current model now that we're selling in the U.S. And it's a car that we've also had 2 championship series or 2 years of championship series in the U.K. with this GTA car.
Okay.
And what it is, it's an entry level GT car, right? Full two frame. FIA, no ABS, no traction control, but paddle shifted sequential. Mm. All the proper, you know, race car stuff.
What's the engine in those?
So it's a Ford V6, 3.7 liter. So it's actually out of like a
Mustang,
an older Cyclone. Yeah, out of a Mustang. But what we do is we put it in. It's full crate motor. We still get it from Ford. And we put a dry sump on it. Full low-tech engine management. So the motor is... It's really bulletproof. Yeah, that's the car right
those,
there.
Those engines weren't bad in the Mustang. They were just like, you know, perpetually overshadowed by the Coyote.
Absolutely. And so now you put it in a car like the Janetta that weighs 2,400 pounds.
Whoa.
You know, and then you've got, you've got this engine that has a great power and torque curve.
Mm-hmm.
You put it in the right vehicle with the right weight. And it's actually a front mid-engine car, right? Because the engine really sits so much further back than the center line of the front axle. So you give it the 50-50 weight balance, then you've got a really exciting package.
So it's the weight of an ND Miata with an extra 120 horsepower over the ND2.
200, you know, our base tune is 270 horsepower, and then that's we pro tune is 300. It's a little bit off of that. So say 270 horsepower on my dyno jet, about 260, 262.
Healthy enough for 24.
So there's not a lot of drivetrain loss in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And this, you know, so we've had we brought about 35 cars over this year.
Oh, wow.
And we'll probably do about 50 to 60 this coming year. So it's and that's pretty much kind of we're scaling our production because we still manufacture for the rest of the world. And so we're kind of exponentially growing Ginetta UK. I mean, obviously coming into the US market and now investing in the US market, I mean, it's just it's exponential in size to what they have in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And then the amount of kind of club racetracks that we have in the US all across the opportunity is just massive to bring in a reliable car that's purpose-built race car that you can do a spec race series with. We actually, before I even brought over cars, I said, I want to make sure that we have a warehouse stocked full of parts. And that's where we've got in South Boston, Virginia. We've got a warehouse full of Ginetta parts. So
if somebody you, bins if, it. Yeah.
If you bin it on Thursday, there's a good chance I can have you racing on Saturday. So,
wow.
It's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Because I really wanted to dispel a little bit of the myth that everyone's like, well, I love the idea of a boutique British car, but the last thing I want to do is, you know, deal with the UK or deal with someone that doesn't understand my timeline or
massive downtime for reliability and durability issues.
Right. So now
the TVR,
someone in the US, they can call my cell phone and they can say, Bear, I've got this issue. How do we resolve it? That's and awesome. I have direct access to the UK factory, direct access to the, you know, everything in Virginia. So we've basically been able to create the support structure so that, you know, when the people that are buying these cars want to go out and race and they want to spend their time, that we can manage their uptime. So that's the GT4 car that we just, you know, kind of did a soft launch. We have had one team running SRO. They ran SRO last year. We ran a 24-hour series of Sebring and Dubai with this car. This is running the British GT as well. And this car, it looks similar to the GTA car with the Ford V6, but this is actually an LS-based you know, kind of Ginetta's secret sauce based on an LS V8 engine with an X-Track transaxle.
Good Lord.
Full MoTeC. The uprights and the brakes come directly from our LMP3 program. So they're full billet uprights with huge wheel bearing cassettes, LMP3 brakes. This thing is, it's got Motorsport ABS, traction control.
A little hardcore for it's compared to the other ones.
Well, you know it is, but ironically, this car is almost easier to drive than the other car, right? Because the other car, one thing I didn't mention of the GTA car, we set that up on kind of narrow 20 inch tires, which are Michelin Pilot PS4S's, right?
Okay.
So, great tire.
And the reason for that is because that's your entry into a GT car, right? Mm. So what do you want to do? You want to feel the car move around. How do you do that? You put it on street tires, right? Mm-hmm. No yep. ABS, no traction control. You get the car to move around, right? And so then someone can learn the skill rather than the guy that goes out first and his first track car is a GT3 RS, right? I mean, sure, yeah. You'll turn fast lap times, but if you turn any of those nannies off, you're going to end up in the woods.
Yeah, bad time.
So it's just, this is kind of goes back to the whole ethos of Ginetta, which is kind of provide a ladder for drivers and retain them within their ranks, right? So they can start in, originally we saw the G40s, which are kind of the junior cars. Those G40s, you can start when you're 14 years old in the UK. Mm-hmm. And in fact, Lando Norris was a G40 Ginetta driver, mm-hmm. right? Came through that rank.
Yep.
Jamie Chadwick, who's the Formula E champion that's won 3 years in a row, was a Ginetta driver. So that's kind of how they, you know, they kind of groom and you kind of work up the ladder. Whereas in the UK, in the US, we'll get there. Right now, we've got the GTA and the GT4. At some point, we'll probably have some sort of junior car. I think there's a strong demand in the US for that, because
knowing
it's coming out of karting, you know, it's either
that's where
you
I was going.
Karting, and then you go into like a formula car, but the expense to go into a formula car is exponential versus karting, right? And there's
not that karting's cheap.
Like you can go into Spec Miata, right?
Right.
But then okay, you can go into Spec Miata on an SCCA level, NASA level, which is great. Great competition, you know, great learning tool. But then to go into further Miata competition, like Global MX5 Cup, everything else, it's a large spend. And then the upside of you going from there to somewhere else, it's difficult, right? So, you know, it's a very kind of, you know, it's a small percentage of the person that's actually going to make it through there. So this actually allows, if we were to do something, it would allow for a true safe GT car race series that's, you know, kind of fun and exciting and gives you the requisite skills to kind of either progress or just, you know, enjoy.
Right. Some people get to the point with things where they're like, you know what? I won't be able to do this as a career, but I'm loving the hell out of it. So I'm just going to keep playing around.
Absolutely.
You know? Yeah. So speaking of playing around, I really want to talk about defenders and, and I know we're, you know, brushing up on getting towards the end of our time here. So
you found it. So there's the, this is the only bowler bulldog in the United States.
Oh, wow.
Oh my gosh.
For the audience, explain what the Bulldog is, because everybody knew it was the Wildcat.
So the Bulldog is a full space frame. It looks like a Defender because it's been designed to have all the Defender body panels.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the Bowler Bulldog is set up to be full rally raid. This is turnkey. You can order this, go out, do the Dakar, do the Baja. That's what this truck is designed for. You know, it's
this crazy.
Particular one has a turbo diesel. Land Rover, and it's got a ZF 8-speed transmission. So like you'd find in, you know, all the most, you know, look at the gear shift, you can see that that looks pretty familiar. You know, Motec dashboard, you know, PDM, everything else is pretty simplified. Suspension is modified from a like a Range Rover Sport. You can see in the back that's a transmission cooler there.
That's to say, I love it.
Yeah, transmission cooler. And this one is actually not even equipped right there, but currently it has three full-size spare tires on the back, and it's got hydraulic jack pistons that come down from just behind the front doors, and they shoot down. And so you're able to, it'll lift one side of the vehicle up at a time. So
that's the most race car thing ever.
That's so great.
It's got onboard air as well.
Let's back up a second. It is modified Range Rover Sport suspension.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not sure what to make of that.
Yeah. Well, so this is, it's straight parts bin. And so actually Bowler was acquired recently by Jaguar Land Rover.
Right.
Interesting.
And so I was just about a month and a half ago, I was over in the UK. And I went to Fen End, which is Jaguar Land Rover's proving ground. And they run their some of their special ops out of Fen End. So I went there. Yeah, that's what the...
Ooh, that's pretty. Is.
Yeah. And then you got the sand mats up there. That's what those orange things are.
Yep.
So went to Fen End to test drive the new Bowler Defender Challenge, which is if you've ever seen it, it's the new D90 with a full Bowler treatment, full cage. And I went over there to test drive it, and I talked to the guy at security, and he said, "Oh yeah, you know, it's very high, like." There's security, it's gated. You have to, like, you can't just walk in there, right? So I walked in, and the guy said, and I said, "Oh, I'm here to do this, and I'm here with this guy." And they said, "Okay, we'll let you in." He goes, "Well, the last guy to drive this was Ben Collins."
Oh, God. The Stig.
Right? So that's big shoes to fill.
Yeah. So and then after I left, I said, "Well, next time you see Ben Collins, you can tell him that Bear Connor drove that thing better than anyone you've ever seen."
That's funny. That's a good fantastic. Looking thing, man. I spent a week last year with a D90 with the Turbo 4, and this year I had a V8, you know, the supercharged SVR motor D90 for a week, and God, it is just turning that into a race car would be the funniest thing of all time, like.
You guys will have to look. So the Ben Collins did it at Fen End, and there's a Stig drive of that. I think Chris Harris also has driven it. There's a number of people have maybe even Henry Catchpole. I think Henry also did it there. But it's wonderful. So I spent time with the Bowler team, and about 10 of their 10 of their guys at the Yorkshire Rally. And it's really, you know, it's good rally racing. They have their own championship within kind of a rally organization. And they're growing it. And these things are, they're bulletproof, they're fun, they're really engaging. So
yeah, they look like a good time. What's more fun, the Bowlers or the Nomad?
A little bit different, but the Bowler, they both create the same style of reaction. The Bowler is a little bit nicer in the fact that you don't always get wet in it.
Yeah.
And there's a little bit of heat, although and actually we cut in, we've got pop-up vents for airflow. It does have AC in there. Granted, it's, you know, race car AC in a very hot truck that has no insulation, so. Again, same thing. Jeanetta has actually, they have AC in them, but it's not going to kind of throw ice cubes at you like a regular street car would. It's just meant to maintain cockpit temperature to like an FIA standard, which is, I think, like 120 degrees or something.
Good Lord.
You know? Yeah.
It's not cold.
My yeah, favorite is every image I've looked for has at least one wheel in the air.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I've got video of me jumping, you know, all four wheels off the ground, jumping this thing.
Awesome.
The bulldog, we have pictures of it 10 feet in the air.
Oh, oh my God. I feel that in my spine.
Yeah. No, it's like butter. There's
that's awesome.
Nothing wrong with it. So it's a really, really unique vehicle. I'm excited to see where Bowler can go. You know, after spending time at the factory, there's a lot of neat things coming out.
You know, it's so interesting.
They did announce the CSP 575, which is something that is hopefully we get here in the U.S. But that is, it's basically like it's a Defender 110 essentially, but with the 575 horsepower supercharged F-Type R V8.
The best engine of Cummins sounds that engine it. Makes. Oh, but wow.
That's fully set up with Bulldog suspension. So this is like the cool SUV that you want to roll through the parking line at school in. You know, this would make the G-Wagon look, you know, seriously. Even the 4x4 squared would make it look a little bit like, yeah.
See that with that engine, something that looks like that is like game over. That's like the one thing to drive for the rest of your life.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, and it's so interesting that like Bowler is doing, you know, the Baja ready vehicles, you know, cause I mean, I'm in Southwest Connecticut and Glickenhaus is not too far. And
yep.
I've seen the boot on the street, you know, parked and
oh yeah.
Same thing, you know, buy it. Get your seat fitted for you and, you know, drive.
Yeah, no, it's definitely. And you know, the guys from SEG and Nat and they're doing some awesome things. Mm-hmm. You know, the Bowler fits. It's a little different price point than the boot.
Yeah,
I mean, so. not considerably less, but it's, you know, I can imagine what the, what a 575 would probably retail for, and it'd probably be, you know, well over $200,000.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, you know, if you look at you look at kind of the luxury performance SUV market, I mean, you can spend
right.
almost $500,000 on a Cullinan, right? So,
or Urus or.
Or yeah, or yeah. Urus or something like yeah, that.
At least with the CSP 575, you get a back seat. Like
right.
Boots, it's two.
But
yeah, you get exhaust right behind your head.
The boot, I've never been in a boot. I've been around them, but it's kudos to what they're doing, right? It's, you know.
Mayhem, yeah.
It's one of those things, whereas I talk to a lot of these other manufacturers and the boutique manufacturers. And it's interesting because I try and say we're not, even though we make a similar product, we're creating experiences for people. And it's not necessarily, I'm going to buy a boot or I'm going to buy mm-hmm. a Bowler, right? It's, mm-hmm. I can buy both of these tools, right? We're in right. a, We're kind of catering to a market where it's, I don't have just a Ginetta and Radical. I have a Ginetta, right. Radical, an Atom. And these are the things that I have because this is the,
yeah.
the type of vehicle I like, right? You know, you don't just have one Lotus. You have a Lotus and a Caterham. And
right.
You know, it's
a very different friends. Mentality. Very different mentality from, you know, like me or Chris. I'm like, okay, if I sell my 460, what am I going to replace it with? And Chris is like, if I sell a Suburban, what am I going to replace it with? It's not, okay, I'll get a Suburban and an Escalade and, you know, and an LX. It's just like a totally different frame of mind.
Well, I mean, it is, yeah, but it's, I think that the only way that these boutique manufacturers are going to continue to turn out vehicles like this is A, if they kind of stop trying to compete as hard mm-hmm. with each other, right? And yeah. just focus on the product and know that the customers are there and they're not exclusive, right? Mm-hmm. Because the same buyer that's going to buy a Ginetta may also buy a Bowler, right? Mm-hmm. It's, you know, they just want different yep. tools for their.
I
want
to hang out with that guy.
Right?
Right.
they've been bitten so hard by the bug. They want quality. Mm-hmm. They want something that they know that they're, you know, that they're special.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I've seen a lot of people also come over from other marks, whether it's Lamborghini or Ferrari or Porsche. Like, in order to make a blip on their radar, you have to have a multi-million dollar portfolio of cars.
Right.
Right. And even then you need to be special. I mean, look at what happened with the guys trying to buy 4 GTs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Think about all those people that didn't get in that have, you know, multi-million dollar car collections, and they submitted appeals and everything else like that.
Yeah, that was crazy. Meanwhile, whereas
if you join a brand like Ginetta or Bowler or Ariel or SCG, you're brought into the family, and then mm-hmm. all of a sudden there's a lot of experiences and things that are opened up for you that kind of go beyond just buying the hardware.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point.
I think that's what makes
people forget about that.
Yeah.
You know, even you can see that even like going a degree closer to street cars, like buying a Lotus versus buying, you know, a Corvette or, you know, an Aston. I mean, Aston's, you know, small in of itself comparatively to some companies, but Lotus is even like a narrower focus. So we are definitely getting close on time. So I just want to ask, what's in your personal garage? What are your toys or not toys? I know.
So my personal garage is a little bit light right now.
right now. Because it's changing. Right now.
So, yeah. So I'm actually very close to finishing up. I've got a BMW E91 wagon.
Cool.
It was a manual 328 wagon that I'm finalizing the full M3 conversion on. So
that's the perfect car.
V8 manual.
Is it this one?
Man.
Yep. Yep.
Those Alpina wheels too?
Yeah. So I'm going to do because I've got all the M3 suspension stuff, the Alpina wheels go away. But it will be a full, you know, M3 fenders. The rear fenders are getting done. M3 bumper. So it's kind of all of that stuff is just about done. All the electronics are done. I gutted the interior, swapped the harness, made all the other stuff work. So it's literally going into paint this winter.
Nice.
And that'll be my,
that's awesome.
That'll be one of my fun, dailies. I've got a truck. I've got an older, Porsche Cayenne Turbo, which I actually am going to do lift kit and all the other,
nice,
you know, yep, bigger stuff, because that's kind of the winter beater.
Deck it out like the Trans-Siberia Rally trucks.
Yeah, exactly. My wife has a Mercedes GLS 550, so that's like our family kid hauler that you know, gets us there just quick enough. And and then I've got a Zenos. So this is something I own with a client, which is a Zenos E10S, which is a pretty unique car that was started by, going back to Lotus, Mark Edwards, who is the current CEO of Lotus, had started Zenos cars with another guy from Caterham. And unfortunately, that company went into receivership. But it's a super fun car, made out of, you know, recycled composites. It's a full backbone aluminum rib structure car. Suspension hangs off.
Crazy. It's
so cool.
That's crazy.
EcoBoost powered, 2 liter EcoBoost with a 6-speed manual. So nice. Very analog car that makes cool noises. Doesn't get driven nearly enough. I also have another car we're finishing up, which is an RS1000 Escort.
Nice.
That is also getting built with an EcoBoost, paddle shifted sequential, Motorsport ABS. It's not that one, but you can see it in the background, the one in the
back there. Van.
So that's a full shell that I brought in from Wales.
That's crazy. I see it's got the proper lights.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Everything about it is, you know, that car is proper. This three-door Escort was one for my friends down in Connecticut there at the Cultivated Collector. Mm. I don't know if you've ever seen some of their stuff, but
yeah, I go to the New Canaan Affine Carburetor shows all the time, and I wander over to Cultivated Collector pretty much every time I'm in town.
Yeah,
it's like I could be there in 6 minutes.
Yeah. So, Matthew and I go way back. And,
oh, really? Oh, that's funny.
Yep. So, a lot of fun.
Yeah, they casually roll out things like, you know, the XJR15? They'll have like two of those at a show. I'm like, didn't even know this was here.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
They bring out some wild, wild things. Yeah, I was actually there.
He's got such a refined and totally, you know, amazing kind of detail on some of these cars. And really, when they talk about curating classic cars, they are... Oh, yeah. He is on the forefront. They just rolled out a 90s Japanese collection of cars.
Were they involved at the New York Auto Show display? JDM.
So.
Yeah. The other thing that they had that was super interesting that I didn't know existed, and this is going back like probably 2 years, but they had I think like one of three E90 M3 lightweights. That had made it carbon everything, you know, slick top car. And it was like, it's like, it just looks like an M3. Meanwhile,
but it was $250,000.
Yes. Yeah. it was crazy, you know. Yeah.
So, I found more Escort pictures.
Mm.
Yeah. That's such a good shape, that car.
It is.
Yeah. And in the UK at the track rod rally, there were probably, I don't know, 100 of these. I mean, Jesus. Not quite at the level that, you know, this car is going at, but really, really fun to watch. Really fun to watch toss through the woods.
That it makes me think of, and I could be completely wrong on if it's the right style of Escort or not. I went to rally in 100 Acre Wood, and there was an Escort running down there. It was the Shamrock one. And every time it would go by, it just sounded like an angry, angry beast. I think he actually hit me with a rock going around the corner. It threw a rock so far.
You're exactly right. They called me once and they go, Bear, do you have another Escort? Because they know I've got one. They're like, do you have another windshield? We just broke a windshield.
Oh, God.
And ironically, like the windshield on my, I have a windshield. I haven't installed it yet because it's, you know, it's scary to ship windshields from the UK, but they're all, it's got a, like a lot of British cars, has a heating element in it.
Mm-hmm.
So
super specific.
super specific. Yeah. You're not going to find one of those windshields around.
That's one of the things you don't think about when working on a project car. It's like finding glass for a car long out of production, you know, that wasn't sold here or wasn't sold in high quantities here.
Why you buy a genetic? Because he's got a whole warehouse full of parts.
Exactly. Yeah. Right? Yeah. I didn't have to for some of the parts for my Escort, I had to go to I was in Ireland and I was like, I told my wife, I'm like, we have to just go buy this place in Galway and stop and pick up some parts. And I ended up coming home with like carbon fiber and mirrors.
Nice.
And stuff in my carry on.
Yeah, right.
Sir, do you have anything to declare?
No.
No. I don't know where any of this came from. Yeah.
Sweet. Bear, I would say, do you have anything to plug? But Ace Performance.
Yeah.
.com.
Ace Performance, Janetta, Ariel.
Bowler. AcePerformanceSystems.com.
Yep. You got me. And so a lot of stuff going on with all boutique cars, but really it's just reach out to me. Let me know if you got any questions on any of that stuff. We get kind of deep into everything from engine management to tuning to, you know, how to get and drive one of these cool what I would call experience cars, you know, whether it's on the track, off-road, anything like that. We have the opportunities.
You have me wanting to make a trip back east, and I rarely want to go back east.
I was going to say, right. I have one more question for you, and is that, can I come visit?
Absolutely, anytime.
You're only like 2.5 hours away, so.
Yeah, yeah, well, let's do it.
Plus, Camille will let you sleep on the couch or something. It's Boston.
Yeah, no, probably. Absolutely, and you know, I've got a house right by the racetrack too.
Mm-hmm.
So
let's do it.
So far away.
It's easy.
Email.
just bring a cool press car and we'll make sure that you get the proper photos. It may be really dirty by the time you return it.
It's too bad we didn't plan this.
But otherwise it'll be fine.
It's too bad we didn't plan this in advance because I have the Cadillac Escalade V right now, man, you can hear that thing a mile away.
I'm sure you'll have other press cars.
Oh my God.
I saw like a video of it. What was it? I think it was Jack.
Savage Geese guys.
Yeah. I saw his clip the other day. So yeah. they've done some stuff with me. I had them do the first Ariel Adam 4 video, which was, you know, fantastic. They came down and they're just
stuff.
They are just, you know, consummate professionals, and just dive so deep into the minutia. So it's really, that's a cool video. If you ever get time, you know, their videos are long, but they're just so good.
It's like a happy medium between like a TST and Engineering Explained.
Yeah, right. So I had them for a couple of days down in South Boston, Virginia. I was with them and we were able to do this stuff. I even provided them with some really bad Mexican and some really poor burgers, but
nice.
They still don't hate me.
Yeah, because they gave him Adam time.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Sweet. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah.
Thanks, man. All right. It's nice to meet you.
It's been fun. Thanks, guys.